Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
International scientists from around the world are warning that chemical pollutants in the environment have the potential to alter animal and human behavior. Joining us on the line is Simon Geer, climatologist and a national authority on global warming and green issues. Simon, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. Very, very well. Thank you.
We do know, obviously, that chemicals can change us. That's why we take medicines. That's why people do drugs. But does it have a permanent effect? Those are those types of chemicals that we are deliberately ingesting. What about the stuff that is out there?
Probably the best known environmental chemical in terms of having a impact on, mm-hmm. On us would be lead. We know that it's a neurotoxin and that it's results in mental impairment and all of those sort of things. And certainly, my parents' generation grew up in a very lead heavy environment, with leaded petrol being the standard. There's quite a wide body of knowledge showing that the chemical makeup of our environment definitely does impact us. And I think what we're beginning to realize now is that we literally do just swim in a sea of man-made chemicals. And most of them, probably 99% of them, are probably fairly benign. But there must be some impacts. And a fair amount of research showing that the obesity epidemic that is sweeping the globe at the moment probably has something to do either with us being exposed to environmental chemicals or those chemicals impacting the gut biome. Wow. The makeup of the species mix of the bacteria that live in our gut.
And there I was thinking it was what I was eating.
Yeah. Well, this is what's interesting is that, yes, obviously we eat more processed food than we have in the past. Mm. But if you have a look at, I was watching highlights of the 1979 Cricket World Cup a few months ago, I think during lockdown, and shots of the crowd, and everyone looks like an Olympic athlete.
Isn't that interesting?
Really, really skinny. And that's changed completely. And that's got to be more than just diet. So there's definitely something else going on there, and environmental chemicals certainly are a candidate.
And how bad is it in South Africa? When we talk about this type of pollution, when we hear about what's going on in the Vaal, for example, that's not chemical, that's sewage. How do we look at what is what here?
I suppose it depends what you're looking at. So, obviously South Africa has major infrastructure problems that spill over into the environment, our sewage management is a very, very good example of that. Our chemical hotspots are probably, the same old areas that we talk about all the time, that Mpumalanga Highveld, with all of the various pollutants that come out of Sasol and Eskom, and the southern parts of Gauteng. So those areas definitely have an impact. And then there are communities that are living in abandoned mines. So that landscape around Stilfontein, that whole area out towards the Northwest Province past Klerksdorp. And probably mines scattered all the way through the Northern Cape and areas that we never visit, never think about. And those mines were never properly closed, never properly rehabilitated. That must have an impact as well.
Do we know are we starting to see any impact, or is it the intangible, not intangibles, but is it more of a long-term observation where you talk about things like gut health, obesity, this type of thing, or is it the Aaron Brockovich cancers and all of that type of thing that we're seeing?
Yeah, so those sort of Aaron Brockovich type events, tend to be fairly well reported because they're often quite acute, and you're able to present a class of people in a courtroom. So, for example, asbestosis was very well prosecuted in South Africa. Look, I don't think everyone who was affected by it was able to get compensation, but it was at least something that was highlighted and action was able to be taken.
Right.
But what we're talking about here is a far more sort of pervasive a cumulative impact of things like mining. And it does irritate me because every single time a new mine is put in place, there's always great commitments made about rehabilitation and setting money aside and all of those things.
Environmental impact studies and all of those. Yeah. But you think it doesn't get it doesn't follow through? Is that the
never to the level that it's supposed to? And what inevitably happens is that initial impact study is maybe done by or for one of the really, really big mining companies, you know, one of the big blue chip companies.
Mm.
But they don't hold on to that mine right the way through its life. They mine it maybe for about half its life, maybe two thirds of its life, and then they sell it off with all of the environmental commitments. And then over and over again, we see these problems of mines then either going bust or being abandoned and are basically ownerless. And the responsibility then falls back on the government. And the whole acid mine drainage thing was a very, very good example of mines that no longer had owners. The money had been extracted. It had been mostly exported off to Europe, and we were left with the problems.
Absolutely. And I think what people don't often realize as well is that many of the mines in this country are open pit, which means that the topsoil and all of that needs to be very, very carefully preserved if it's going to have as little impact as possible. Unfortunately, that's all we do have time for. Simon Gear, thank you for chatting to us, climatologist and National Authority on Global Warming and Green Issues, talking about chemical pollutants and how they alter animal behavior and human behavior.